is it like to grieve in America today, in a culture that has largely abandoned the rituals that acknowledge grief and support those in mourning? After a poet and critic, Megan O'Rourke, lost her mother to cancer in 2008, she began to examine that very question as she documented the evolution of her own profoundly painful experience of grief in online columns for Slate. The series generated hundreds of impassioned responses and became the basis of her memoir, The Long Goodbye, which is now out from Riverhead. It's a great pleasure to welcome Megan O'Rourke to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
When you started to write about this, how much of it was for you and how much of it was for public consumption?
It's a great question. It's hard to pinpoint the answer to that. I think when I first began writing about it, I was writing private notes to myself, sort of to try to, you know, capture what had happened. You know, the experience of attending to someone who's living with illness can feel a lot like being in the center of a tornado. And I know that the last weeks of my mother's life felt really chaotic for my whole family. And after she died, there was just that moment of stopping and pausing and thinking, what just happened? And I began writing things down, I mean, even before she died, just as a way, I think, of trying to get a grasp of what was happening. And I also think because I didn't want to forget her, and I knew she was already slipping away, and I wanted to remember things she had said or done. So it began very privately, but then what happened was I was very behind on my Slate column. I hadn't been writing it because I'd been helping take care of my mom. And my editor said, well, why don't you write about what you're thinking about, which is grief? And I think if she had never said that, I might not have set out to write about grief for the public in any way, because I kept having the feeling that, you know, that my grief was ordinary in the scheme of things, right? We all lose somebody.
Right.
To me, it felt extraordinary, but that's the paradox. It feels extraordinary to you, but ordinary to the rest of the world.
You make such a great point, because my mother passed away 3 years ago, and I just remember this of a stroke, and I remember this feeling of, oh my God, this obviously has to happen to everyone at some point, but why? I've never heard about this incredible,
yeah,
horrible feeling that just takes you over and doesn't let you go for a very, very, very long time.
Yeah, well, I'm so sorry, first of all, to hear about your mom. And second, I think you captured absolutely what my feeling was, which was a little bit of like, wait, why didn't anyone tell me?
Right.
You know, which is, of course,
yeah,
crazy, because we know that the culture is filled with things about grief. But I don't know what your experience was, but my experience and the experience of a lot of people I've heard from has been that, you know, grief is just really, really different from what you think it will be. It's not just sitting around crying all day long. It's actually like a sense that the world itself has sort of changed around you,
mm-hmm,
and that your position in it is, you know, certainly in those early months, feels very precarious or fragile or even imperiled. But, you know, it may be also that you're still able to laugh and have, especially when you're remembering, like I kept remembering funny things my mom did, and I could kind of laugh and smile. And so my friends would say, oh, you're not doing so badly. But of course, inside, I was experiencing this real rupture in my sense of my place in the world.
When you look at just that overall term of grieving, it really does, it often depends on the circumstance, doesn't it, of how we grieve, of whether it's a sudden loss or unexpected. My mother was 78, your mother was in her late 50s. So age there's a lot of factors that vary into that, aren't there?
There really, really are. And I mean, I think that's been the kind of most amazing and humbling thing about hearing from readers. And I'm really grateful to the people who've written to me, because I feel like I just understand much more about grief. And I think the one thing I really came away from talking with people is that it's so much dependent on your relationship with the person, and for some people it's a pet whom they, you know, elicits the strongest sense of loss. And also I've heard from a lot of women who had miscarriages, and in that case, they're mourning a relationship they had in their body with the unborn baby, but also the idea of a future self. And I think that, you know, there's no rule of thumb like, oh, it's, you know, hardest to lose, a child, but less hard to lose a mother, you know, easiest to lose a father. There's no rules. I think probably losing children, that said, I do think probably losing children is a different order, because one thing that I was able to comfort myself with, at least, was the sense that, you know, it was natural in the scheme of things for my mother to go before me. But I really did come away just thinking, okay, you know, none of us can ever make assumptions about anyone else's grief. You really have to kind of try to listen to what the person is feeling and make space for it.
You spoke a moment ago about the relationship and how that plays into it. And your mother was diagnosed, and it was 2.5 years before she died, and you cared for her during that time. Obviously, a relationship gets tested at a point like that, but I assume that that's time that is really, that you really cherish now that you had that.
Yeah, you know, and I think about, your mother died of a stroke, so I imagine it was very sudden.
Yeah, 3.5 yeah. weeks. But still, I look at that time as very special.
Yeah, and so you have a sense of it. I mean, absolutely, it's a torturous time, very painful to live with the anticipation that this person is probably going to die. But, you know, I think in our case, look, you know, we're Irish Catholics, and we're good at having fun, and we're bad at talking about our feelings, you know, and so it kind of forced us to sit down and really just talk about some stuff that we'd never talked about, and just to become, you know, kind of physically closer. You know, while I'd always been really close to my mom, I didn't have that kind of relationship with her where we were always like hugging or entwined or doing lots of girly things. We didn't have that. We were really close, but in a kind of more quiet way. And so it gave us time to just say stuff. And, you know, all the stuff you're scared of saying suddenly becomes really urgent to say. And I am grateful for that, for sure.
So the thing that's interesting in the book is, obviously, this has an effect on your life. It has an effect on your relationship with your mother. But it also has an effect on you personally. You marry your longtime boyfriend, and then you're dealing with your mother's illness, and then you separate him from your boyfriend just a few months later. So
yeah.
It is all-consuming.
It is very much all-consuming. It really put me in a very, very different place. And I think that, you know, as I look back on it now, I think one reason for that was that I was at an age where, as a young woman, you're sort of trying to move out into the world away from your family. But my mother was dying, so that was pulling me back home into family. But, you know, actually one very happy recent development has been that my ex-husband and I are, I don't know what to say, we're dating, I guess. I never know what to say to people, and I always fear that they'll think I'm crazy, but as I've been thinking about it with the book coming out, I think, well, this is actually a real example of how grief can bring people closer together, but it can make it much harder to communicate, and in our case, it really did, and it's only now that we've found a way back to that, and so I think a lot of families go through that, too, with siblings or parents, or, you know, there's a lot of so many emotions are involved, and fear is involved, and love is involved, and so it becomes a very chaotic time, or did for me.
Don't you think that when it happens that you feel a maturity that you never felt before? There's a feeling that years later, I think both your mother and my mother both died in 2008, so we're about the same time out, where you have a feeling of like, all right, well, just throw it at me, because I think I lived through that. I can pretty much go through anything now.
I love that you said that, because I think it is really true. I mean, look, I don't want to reduce anything, and nor do you, to like a kind of Hallmark card, but it's really true, right? You come away. I don't think it's true for everybody, but I think it is true for many people, and it was true for me, that I came away thinking that the thing that most scared me in the world had happened, and I had survived it. And I kind of knew something about suffering now, and I also knew that suffering is connected to love, right? And it was a kind of privilege, and that was in some ways why I think I wrote this book, was that I kind of wanted to, in an age where we put the emphasis on healing or getting over it or letting go, you know, and again, this might be the stubborn, perverse Irish side of me, but when people said that to me, I was like, I don't want to let go yet, because I loved my mom and I want to properly mourn her, and that feels right to me. But it's very interesting you say that, because we just did a survey on Slate about grief, and we're going to be publishing the results in a couple weeks. But one of the questions was, did anything positive come out of your experience? And there were certainly lots of people who said no. But there were also lots of people who used words like, I survived and now I'm stronger. There were people who used words like, I came away with greater empathy. Mm-hmm. There were people who said things like, I have more wisdom. And I do think, for me, I kept going back to a quote that I include in the book by the wonderful novelist Marilynne Robinson, and she says that, you know, suffering is actually part of our human privilege, and we shouldn't just be scared of it. It touches on all of the things in us that are wonderful, such as our capacity to love. And, you know, I kind of hung on to that quote like a life raft in the hardest moments, because it helped remind me that the reason I was feeling so much pain was that I really loved my mom, you know, and that was a lucky thing.
You touch on in the book, and I think it's it's fascinating about the lack of ritual and the lack of how we deal with grief. There really isn't a lot. We have the funeral, and there isn't a lot there to sort of work. You get to a point where the person passes away, there's a day or two, and then you're just expected to walk back into your life. And you really have a theme in the book about the lack of ritual in our society to support mourners. How do you think we got that way?
Yeah, it's a really great question. It's a complicated one, and I don't want to kind of oversimplify it, but I think that there's a whole host of reasons, and we can identify some. You know, some are kind of sociological, right? We don't live in small towns anymore. So, for example, I don't know what it was like when you lost your mom, but when my mom died, I didn't live in a little community of people who knew her or shared my religious value. You know, I'm actually not religious, but, you know, in the past, you would have lived in a world where it was more likely that you lived somewhere close to where you grew up, that people shared your kind of cultural, you know, you came from the same ethnic group. And also more people died at home. And somewhere at the early 20th century, around the turn of the early 20th century, more and more people began dying in hospitals. People began to commute to jobs, to live in suburbs, and the kind of small-town community fractured. We live in a much more heterogeneous world. And so there's not this, and there are many wonderful things about that, but I think that one thing that happens is, and also as kind of, you know, some people became less religious, we lost that kind of intact social fabric that really supported mourners. And, you know, it's complicated because obviously there could be something very restrictive about mourning. I was just telling someone about the fact that, you know, in Victorian England, women had to mourn their husbands for 2.5 years, which meant, you know, circumscribed social engagements and wearing black. But the husbands only had to mourn their wives for 6 months, right? And that's a kind of rigid prescription that we would all sort of object to now, I think. But the thing that rituals did was they carved out space in what we all know can be a very hectic world, and they carved out a kind of time for reflection that allowed people to observe their loss and to kind of mark it. And I think that time becomes this really complicated thing when you're grieving because the world is hurtling on, but in my case, I just kept being suffused with memories of my mom, you know, from when I was little, from when she was sick, and it was almost like I was living in two worlds, and I really do think rituals helped people navigate that. They also gave people a way of having their loss recognized without having to talk about it personally, right, or on psychological terms. And I don't know what your experience was, but there certainly were times when people would say, "How are you?" And I wasn't great, but I didn't want to say, "Well, I feel really terrible and I'm thinking about my mom," right? It would have been nice to just feel rather that, you know, at the end of the week somehow I was going to do something that would observe her loss.
And don't you feel that you are, I mean, that grieving never stops. You're still grieving.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that it gets much easier, right? You know, and I'm much more able to see and take pleasure in the world and sleep regularly and all those things I couldn't do right after my mom died. But the image I kept coming up with was that it's not something that, you know, the problem is people keep talking about healing, and it's that makes it sound like a disease, first of all. And second of all, it makes it sound like you get better and everything.
You'll get over it.
Right. And I felt like that wasn't really right. But what it was like was you know, the mourner is a kind of tree that an obstacle has come in its way, and it has to keep growing, but now it's growing around the obstacle. And so it's sort of forever shaped by that change. But it's continuing, and it's whole, but it's just changed.
When you look at, ultimately, in writing about it and sharing your experiences, it seems that through Slade and through the survey that you're taking and in writing this book, that you're trying to open a dialogue with people.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that I think there are many people who feel embarrassed or sort of ashamed of their grief, and certainly that was something I felt, you know, especially as it dragged on, right? So that I felt sort of by 2 months in I was supposed to have gotten better, and I wasn't, right? And I think this is because I think there's a silence around grief, and it's actually one of the reasons that we're seeing this kind of host of books coming out about it, I think, is that one thing that people do with that silence is they try to write a book about it because there's no other place to sort of mourn. So for me, writing became my act of mourning. you know, Americans are very uncomfortable with the topic of death, and understandably so. And I'm sure you had this kind of experience of, you know, very quickly, no one bringing up the loss, or also, you know, being afraid to bring up the loss because they don't want to make you feel bad, or they worry that they'll say the wrong thing. And you know, if we could open up a conversation that helped us find a better language for grief and for grieving, I think that would be a wonderful thing.
Well, this book is such a comfort and so beautifully written. It's The Long Goodbye, and it is published by Riverhead. Megan O'Rourke, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much, and best of luck.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book is The Long Goodbye. It is published by Riverhead. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.